totally knew that dog was dead.
I had a feeling.
I didn't know that it was written that detailed. I knew the punchline was humans can lick too, which I thought was a great like kicker. Maybe I glanced over the dead dog.
Oh, God. The look on her face, I was like, oh, shit. This is not cool at all.
She's such a drama queen. What's up? This is Cluvies on Up. It's not just a game anymore. I'm Dave, joined by my co-host, Mr. Ryan.
And I have not a clue of what's going on right now.
Our tagline for this week, it's not just a game anymore. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com.
Could you give me a clue?
Maybe. it's found by Dave at the website in the office. We are Movies on Up. If you know what movie that's from, email us, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter's @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, you win a very special Movies on Up prize package. And I'm announcing a new contest that'll run till the end of the year. If you email us in these next 2 months, not only will you be entered to win that week's prize contest, anybody that does will be entered to win the massive, largest in history Movies on Up prize package ever that'll ship out in January.
So enter to win that one, folks.
Yeah, enter to win that one.
You can win them both.
Yeah, you can get both.
Somebody's probably going to – you have to win both, right? I mean –
Well,
no.
If you win the first one.
If you win the second one. Oh, shit, I don't know.
If
you
win
could
the,
win them both.
Yeah, you could win them both. Or you could win none. But it's up
That's
to you.
That's probably the most likely.
You win none if you don't enter.
That's
you
true.
Lose 100% of the contests.
You don't enter.
Wayne Gretzky said that, didn't he?
Yeah. The great one.
Anyway, this is Cluvies on Up. Kenneth Branagh takes to a train to try to solve a murder with Ray and Olaf.
Edward Scissorhands.
Edward's a bunch of people. In this movie, with murder on the train.
Yeah. I think that's it. Murder on the girl on the train.
Yeah. So we thought, hey, how have we done a movie podcast for like 6 years now and not done our favorite murder mystery / whodunits? That's such a broad.
Yes. That's how.
A broad thing. And like, I have a feeling you'll have quite a few noirs on yours.
I have 5.
Yeah, I figured. Because as I'm going through, like, there was something that's like, oh, that's really good. I'll leave that off because I'm sure it's Ryan's. I wanted it to be like a mystery.
Yes.
Like I counted something like 7.
Right.
Because Kevin Spacey gives himself up like halfway through. Or ones where you...
Or Silence of the Lambs. You know who that is. It's about catching him.
Yeah. Like Kiss the Girls would have been good that I left off my list. But like it's about who did it and you're not following them half the time through. So there is that air of like, I don't know who the killer is. So I tried to stick with those. Although some of the ones that came up, I don't think were telegraphed right away. So I may have broken my own rules.
Really only one that breaks my own rule of not knowing who the killer is until the end. But every other one, the entire movie is trying to figure out, like Kenneth Branagh is trying to do.
I tried to think a little outside the box and use that as kind of a where to expand. From like Kiss the Girls is the kind of movie I think of when it's like, oh yeah, that's a murder mystery or... But I tried to go a little further away from that. But enough clues about what might be on our list. Instead, let's get to our list. Mr. Ryan, your number 5 favorite whodunit.
I feel like at some point I've talked about all these, but I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Gee, Ryan, how many noirs are you going to have? I'm going to have all of them because I don't think I've ever done a list that's been all film noir. I may have.
This is probably the only time we've had a chance to where you could get away with it, really.
Yeah, and I may have tried to fudge it somewhere, but I mean, this certainly, those movies specifically lend themselves to, you know, the story of a private detective trying to solve a mystery, and most of the time, someone ends up, at least one person ends up dead, and you're trying to kind of unravel everything that comes along with that. And my number 5 is a film noir from 1949, directed by Rudolph Matt. It is DOA, starring Edmund O'Brien, Pamela Britton, and Luther Adler. This movie's dope. I found a way to actually mention this movie a couple times on the show. But the thing I love most about it, and again, you have to consider this is 1949, it takes a really simple twist on the genre and makes it a really imaginative noir. We open the movie following our protagonist as he stumbles his way through the police station and reports a murder, his own. O'Brien's Frank Bigelow gets poisoned and he knows he's going to die. So he spends the rest of the movie combing through the events of the last week or so, trying to figure out who killed him. He's trying to solve his own murder. There's an inevitability to what's going to happen because it's already happened. There is no, like, spoiler alert, magical cure that's going to make him live. He's not looking for that. He's just looking to make sure that his killer is brought to justice, or killers, just to make sure that they don't get away with it. And it's such a simple idea, but I can't really think of many other instances. Movies have been told out of sequence or told in flashback, but something like that where we've got a ton of examples of, okay, solve this murder, but rarely do you have somebody trying to solve their own. So I love the fact that it was different in an era where they were making tons of these movies. This one stands out. It's not the best film noir you're ever going to see, but I think it's really, really unique, and it's still fun today.
Yeah, and this...
They did remake the movie.
This kind of, that's where I'm leading in. That's one of my also-rans, was the Dennis Quaid, Meg Ryan. I like it. I feel like it had Psycho Center, where it was almost too similar to the original, but DOA, the original, could get lost in the shuffle with all the other noirs going on.
Yeah.
This kind of came out and was like, hey, here's a 1949 noir that's very similar to that, just it's 1988. It was done in black and white, and I thought Randy Quaid was good. Yeah, Daniel Stern was in there, Charlotte Rampling, Meg Ryan. So I liked the remake as well. I don't know why. It's one I saw really young, and it just stuck with me. My number five, another one that I saw really young, and it stuck with me. It's about, we talked about trying to solve your own murder. This is about being
set up
for a murder and trying to solve it just to save your own tail.
I did not
do that on purpose, but that's probably the best one I've ever done. It is from 1988, same year as the DOA remake, from Robert Zemeckis. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Bob Hoskins, Charles Fleischer, Jessica Rabbit. It's a film noir setup. TV actor gets framed for murder. There's a big conspiracy behind it. The only way to set him free is to prove the conspiracy. Washed up, drunk private detective on
Femme
the case.
Fatale.
Yeah.
I mean, it has all the tropes.
With
all
cartoon
characters. Yeah.
And it's such a brilliant movie. And it's good because it does keep you going. The reveal at the end, I think, is great. And when I was 9 years old, was terrifying.
Yeah, it was.
Was absolutely terrifying.
Where he dips that shoe in there?
Oh, my gosh. Like, it was just a cartoon shoe, and I felt so bad for it.
You pulled a Kayla.
Yeah. I cried in the corner pretending that it traumatized me. It was.
I'll never watch another movie again.
I'll never watch a mixed animated live-action hybrid. Hey, what up, cool world? It's a film noir.
Yeah.
With cartoon characters. And I think we were in a different world with licensing in 88. I feel like now everybody would be trying to squeeze every penny out of it. You would just have, like, Hugs Rabbit.
Yeah.
like you wouldn't have, like, the legit characters in there. But this had your Betty Boop, your characters that you're familiar with. And it's so good. And I love Bob Hoskins. Bob Hoskins, I think, is one of the best, most underappreciated actors ever.
That was a great role for him.
It was a perfect role for him because it had that edge that he brings. It had that intensity. He played it so well. He had this just rough around the edges and the straightest of straight man. And the payoff with the hyenas at the end. Like, I love it. Like, I love everything about this movie. So I could not put this. I'm shocked it's not higher.
Me too.
But I felt like this would be one of the, like, obvious ones, and I thought there might be crossover, so I wanted to just get it out of the way and go from there, because I absolutely love and adore this movie.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the first, and I wouldn't call it a noir. It's a neo-noir, but one of the first ones I ever saw before I knew I liked the genre. I knew I really liked that movie. I remember seeing it in the theaters, and, oh, God. That was a really, really excellent movie because you can enjoy it as an adult because it's not just a cartoon. That was one of the first times I think I actually can remember a movie that, like, now we get spoiled with Pixar stuff. So as an adult, you can watch it. You can take your kids to it. They're going to enjoy it. And it's not mind-numbingly stupid. But I feel like that was one of the first ones I could recall thinking that, oh, maybe my dad didn't hate taking me to that. Maybe he did. I don't know.
It's like, I love it. Like, now. Yeah. And it's not nostalgia. Like, it's a good movie. Like, it's a really good movie. What, 30 years later? And it holds up. Like, it's really good.
Yeah, I'd watch it again tomorrow. But number four is a little bit newer. It's one that immediately comes to mind for me for a couple reasons, and one that I know is not going to make Dave's list because he hates it.
Oh, is it Brick?
It is Brick. It is Rian Johnson's 2006. It's not really a neo-noir. It's a film noir set in a high school starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Emile DeRaven, and Nora Zettner. Other than this being a great movie, Brick is going to make the list for a couple reasons. First of all, we may have a somewhat successful movie from Johnson just on the horizon this year. And like I said, I knew it wasn't going to make Dave's list, so this would be one that I didn't have to worry about crossover. What I love about Brick is that it's not a parody of the noir genre, and it isn't even something like 3 o'clock High, which isn't really a parody of Westerns. It's just like
a modern Western.
It's a modern Western, but kind of like light almost. You know what I mean? Instead of a gunfight, it's just a fist fight, and it's just like a toned down version. Brick is not toned down.
No, it's
noir.
Murder.
Yes, it's not, murder. There's drug trafficking.
There was one a few years ago. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was Assassination of a High School President, where it was like this, the same kind of idea, but the stakes weren't there. It wasn't murder.
Right. It is a noir that just takes place in a high school. You're Humphrey Bogart or whoever your protagonist is, your grizzled private detective. You know, they could get shot. The Maltese Falcon at the beginning, Bogart's partner gets killed. So, like, the stakes are there. Like, these people can die. And obviously, in this movie, the stakes are the same for Joey Gordon-Levitt. Basically, everyone in the movie tells him at some point they're going to kill him. So it's just him trying to solve the murder of one of his ex-girlfriends. It's not even... Neo-noir is kind of a thing that, and I'll talk about it. My number one is when you say neo-noir, it's usually the first movie that people think of. And like I said, I don't even think it applies to this. This is a movie from 1941 in a 2006 skin. The plot and the dialogue are almost like sampled right from Dashiell Hammett.
And that's what took me out of it. I'm not going to lie. Like, the dialogue is what sunk this movie for me.
I have a feeling if they would have updated the dialogue and used like modern vernacular, then...
Like if Diablo Cody
wrote it. I was just going to say Diablo Cody.
Maybe it's somewhere in between.
Yeah, right. Somewhere between Dashiell and Diablo. If we could just get that, then I think this movie probably would have worked better for Dave. But for someone that... Even by the time Brick came out in 2006, I had already watched a ton of film noir, and I love those movies. Spoiler alert, they have not updated the dialogue from 1949's DOA. It still sounds the same. So that really didn't bother me. I almost thought it was kind of refreshing to just see a younger crop of people really trying to emulate something that I really liked. And I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt was fantastic in this movie. I think he would have been like a wonderful Humphrey Bogart kind of character had he been born about 70 years
earlier.
And
he had this run around this time. Like, there was a bunch. Like, there was this. There was The Lookout. There were these, like, grittier crime movies where he was really good in all of them. I just dislike this movie. And I knew it would make your list. Honestly thought it would be a little higher. My number four... Murder mystery doesn't have to be a single murder. It could be multiple murders, or it could be blowing up an entire train and murdering a lot of people.
Over and over.
Add a twist to that, you have 8 minutes to solve this case. And that's what we got from 2011's The Source Code, written by Ben Ripley, directed by Duncan Jones, Jake Gyllenhaal, Michelle Monaghan, Vera Farmiga, Jeffrey Wright. I really like this movie. It's... Groundhog Day-ish, but it's by design. They know why he's living that 8 minutes over and over again. It's a very cool premise. We have this technology. You can go to this moment in time. You have 8 minutes. When it's over, we can go back. So you have to just keep building that. And you're
a little bit at a time.
You're not starting over. You're
like
not,
the Bitch of War, kind of.
Yeah, like the Bitch of War, where he's learning every day, but he's... And it's the same here. And it was done so well. And Duncan Jones... I mean, I hold Duncan Jones... very, very highly, even after Warcraft. Between this
That's
and...
That's why you watched Warcraft.
It is why I watched Warcraft. And you know what? It wasn't bad. It wasn't as bad as people made it seem. I don't care about that world, and they didn't do much to make me care about it. But Source Code takes you into this really small setting. You know, it's kind of like a double bottle movie, because you have the train, and then you have Vera Farmiga and Jeffrey Wright. You have everything going on in the lab. both of them play out so well. Gyllenhaal's really, really good. Not just in this, just in everything. But he's, I love what Duncan Jones can do with his male leads. Like, that's why I can't wait for Mute, the Netflix one that's coming out. I just really love what Duncan Jones gets out of his leads. And Gyllenhaal's no exception. And it's just such a cool premise, and it's probably not the last sci-fi infused movie that I have on this list.
There's very little sci-fi infusion in my number three. It is from 1931, directed by Fritz Lang. It's M, starring Peter Lorre, Otto Wernicke, and Gustav Gruggens. This one sort of breaks the rule in that you find out relatively early who our child murderer is, but it makes the list because this is like one of the proto-noirs, pre-World War II. Most of what we're familiar with film noir came in the 40s and even a little bit after that. But this movie specifically is what introduced the world to a fantastic character actor that was Peter Lorre. He is the one that plays the child-murdering psychopath. And while you might expect that there's very little gore in a movie from 1931, you'd be correct in that assumption. But the opening scene where we see Lori's Hans Beckert trailing this potential victim, the way Lang shoots it, he shows us what's waiting for this girl at home. They're just getting ready, setting her place for dinner, her seat at the table, and what is most likely waiting for her if she never makes it there. The movie is about neglect, but it's also about hypocrisy. You've got the criminal element of this city kind of taking it upon themselves to look for and hunt down Beckert, and you have the police trying to do it as well. Spoiler alert, the criminals get to him first, and he finds himself on trial, and the judge who's presiding over this case, the criminal judge, is a guy that's wanted on three charges of manslaughter. Lorre and Lang are enough reason to see the movie, and if you haven't, I think it's one that folks should see. Lang was an incredible, incredible director at sort of the infancy of film, or film as we know it. And this was the movie that he always thought was his best. So that's good enough for me to make the number three on my list.
My number three is, I'm going to go on a limb and say he's probably the biggest director on either of our lists. I had Zemeckis, but, or maybe, I don't know. I don't know who else is on yours.
I got a pretty big one at number two.
Well, my number three, Steven Spielberg from 2002, starring Tom Cruise, Samantha Morton, Max von Sydow, Colin Farrell. Minority Report. I try to think of different ones. And, you know, you had Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where they're trying to solve the murder just to clear his name. This is kind of the same thing, just the murder hasn't happened yet. It's Tom Cruise and the heading the pre-crime unit that arrests people for murders that they're going to commit. He's under arrest for a murder he's going to commit in 36 hours, but he doesn't know the victim. So leads to him basically trying to make sense of everything. And much like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, big conspiracy. It's a little bit different because it's not necessarily the whodunit in the sense of, hey, here's a murder, let's spend the rest of the movie figuring out who did it. It's a who gon' do it instead of a who done it.
My number two may be directed by the Steven Spielberg of the 50s and 60s. It's Alfred Hitchcock. And my number two is 1954's Rear Window, starring Jimmy Stewart, Grace Kelly, and Wendell Corey. Depending on what day you catch me, and if you catch me today, I actually think that this might be my favorite Hitchcock movie. And God knows there could be any number of Hitchcock movies that actually make this list. Rebecca is one that I kind of toyed with, but I like Rear Window more, and I didn't want to have five Hitchcock movies on here. Although after leaving him off the 50 greatest horror movies, I guess it would be just setting the universe right if we did have a bunch of movies on this one of his. I guess other than really seeing M, you know the killer in that movie. This one, you think you see the murder happening from across the street. Us and Jimmy Stewart, we feel like we know what happened. You spend the rest of the movie trying to just prove it. What I really appreciate about this movie is our main character is confined to a wheelchair for the entirety of the movie, and as a viewer, we're in a pretty similar situation. we can watch the events unfold, but you can't actually do any of the investigation ourselves. Oh, don't go in that room, you idiot. Or, oh, why don't you look in the filing cabinet? We have no more control than Jimmy Stewart does. Or he has just a tiny bit more control than we do. And that only becomes more and more the case as the events unfold. The police aren't listening to him. And he has to rely on his girlfriend, Grace Kelly. She literally just takes the ball in her own hands and goes over into the belly of the beast to try and find evidence in this guy's apartment. And at that point, Jimmy Stewart and us are literally in the same boat. We're both watching the events, and it's completely out of everyone's hand. And that's where Hitchcock, being a phenomenal filmmaker when it comes to putting in tension in his movies, the third act there where we know that Grace Kelly's in danger because we think that she's in the apartment of a murderer. There's nothing we can do. There's nothing Jimmy Stewart can do. And then when we find the murderer is actually on his way over to Stewart's apartment, then, you know, he's kind of helpless there as well. I think it's just a well shot movie. I don't want to say it's like a bottle movie because most of it does take place in Stewart's apartment. Even when we get to go into the building across the street, we still see it from his vantage point. So we pretty much spend the entirety of the movie right in there with him. I love the movie. It's a simple story. He's in a wheelchair because he broke his leg taking pictures. So all he can do is just look out the window to pass the time. He starts really looking at his neighbors and giving them all nicknames. He thinks he sees a crime. How do you prove it when you can't go over there? It's a simple premise, but in the hands of somebody like Hitchcock, it becomes a really, really great movie.
The Shia LaBeouf one. Disturbia?
Yeah. And there was a lawsuit about Disturbia. The folks that wrote the short story that Rear Window was based off of sued the filmmakers of Disturbia, saying that the movie was awfully familiar, awfully similar. And it was, but the suit got dismissed because the judge didn't agree. I was going to mention that in here, but since the judge threw it out, I guess technically it's not really a remake, but Jesus.
Yeah, it's not a remake, air quotes, but LaBeouf was on house arrest, wasn't he? Something like that. Yeah.
He was confined to his room, was watching a murder happen across
David
the street.
Morse? Was it David Morse?
I think so.
I think it was David Morse. My number two also involves somebody in a wheelchair, the genetically pure Jude Law in a wheelchair. This one I might be reaching a little bit as far as the whodunit aspect of it, but there is a murder and Ethan Hawke is under investigation for it in 1997's Gattaca, written and directed by Andrew Niccol. I went a long way to get here. You have this world where there's perfectly genetic people. Ethan Hawke is on the outside of that looking in, but he really wants to go to space. Jude Law, who's in a wheelchair, borrows his DNA, gets the dream mission he wants. He's going into space. But now there's a murder. The mission control guy, the mission master, whatever they call him. I didn't work for NASA. I don't know.
I think they call him mission masters.
Mission masters. Comes up dead, which opens an investigation. His non-pure DNA is found at the scene. So a lot of it's the race against the clock, like in DOA and every other movie we've talked about. We're trying to solve this murder, also running from who turns out to be his brother, his genetically more pure brother. So maybe I went a little bit, because there's a lot more to this movie than the murder mystery, but that's really the kind of thing that kicks everything into play, because everything's going as planned until that murder and that investigation, and it takes trying to figure out exactly why that murder happened and by who to really get to where we need to be. I really love Gattaca, I think.
That's the takeaway.
Yeah, I think I had to have mentioned it. I'm pretty sure we did an Ethan Hawke episode. I had to have mentioned it, but I feel like it's one of those movies. That's Minority Report. Like, I feel like, despite being Cruise and Spielberg, I feel like Minority Report is this really underrated movie. Like, it's a brilliant sci-fi crime action movie. Like, I think Minority Report is perfect sci-fi, and so is Gattaca, I think. I think they, when I see people praise...
One of which is a little bit slower paced than the other.
Yeah.
It's Gattaca.
But when I see people praise, like, Blade Runner and stuff, I would put Gattaca and Minority Report above that as far as, like, world building and, like, experience, but what do I know?
you don't get a lot of argument from me on that one. My number one, like I mentioned earlier, is kind of the movie that folks point to when it comes to being the face of a neo-noir, and that's a movie that very well could have been made. Feels like the themes were right there from the 1950s, but it was made in 1997 by Curtis Hanson. It's L.A. Confidential, starring Kevin Spacey, two guys no one had heard of at the time, Russell Crowe and Guy Pearce, and the film that made us now and forever say Academy Award winner, Kim Basinger. It's based on James Ellroy's novel. This is a movie that is sort of the personification of that neo-noir. It's the poster child for it because it was successful, because it made a big impact in the pop culture.
A bunch of Oscar noms and a
yes.
couple wins.
Yeah.
Well,
a couple.
Basinger's win.
Yeah.
It was one script too, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yeah. And that was it, because everything else was won by Titanic.
Yeah.
Go figure that one. If I were to maybe argue that if you want to point to a neo-noir, it's really Chinatown, and that was 20 years before L.A. Confidential. But at least to people of our age, I think, even with you throw the book in there, I think most folks are probably more in the L.A. Confidential camp. Here we've got detectives that are played by Pierce, Crowe, and Spacey, each following their own case, and they're not all murder cases, but they end up kind of realizing after pulling the each separate thread that they're actually all kind of connected to the same larger plot. Kim Basinger was, it deservedly, she won an Oscar, and I joke that Kim Basinger is an Oscar winner now, but she was a great call girl, femme fatale, and this also won for Best Adapted Screenplay. It was the only two wins that it got from nine nominations.
Like 12? Oh, nine. Okay.
Nine nominations that year.
It was a lot.
Yeah, it's a great story, wonderfully put together by Hanson, and made stars in the States out of Russell Crowe, for sure, to a lesser extent Guy Pearce, but this was the movie that broke Academy Award winner Russell Crowe.
This list was very, I knew you'd have L.A. Confidential. I knew it'd be pretty high. Like, it would have been on my list. I knew Brick would be in there for you. There's one that I'll mention in my also-rans that I'm shocked didn't make your top five.
Because it's on my also-rans,
yeah.
too, because I thought it would be in yours.
Yeah, I left it off because I thought it'd be in yours.
Yep.
I figured it'd be at least those two, and then maybe that third, and then older movies. My number one is newer. This took a sudden turn into a really good Guy Pearce episode. My number one is from 2000. You know John G raped and killed his wife, but who is John G? That's what Guy Pearce is trying to find in 2000's Memento, directed by Christopher Nolan, written by him and his brother. I wanted to name drop this earlier, but I didn't want to spoil it, because you mentioned like there's a lot of ways to tell noirs, whether it's through flashback, whether it's through a distorted timeline. This is backwards.
Check and check.
Yeah, this is backwards. It's a brilliant piece of filmmaking that this might be sacrilege. I don't think Nolan's come close to touching sin. I mean, Dark Knight, I love. Batman Begins, I love. They're not works like this. Like, this is such a hard thing to pull off.
From a construction standpoint.
From a storytelling
yeah.
standpoint. To have a twist ending in a movie that's told backwards.
You start at the end, basically.
Yeah. I forget the Netflix movie this year. It had Rainn Wilson in it. It tried to do the same thing. It's from, I think Oren Peli directed it. Not good, but it tried to do the same backwards thing, but it was, you saw it coming a mile away. Guy Pearce is good. Joey Pants is really good. Carrie Ann Moss. I really love this movie, and this made me a big Nolan fan.
I think it made a lot of people big,
like,
Nolan fans.
Because I went back and I watched Following, and Following I liked a lot. It was also non-linear in a way, but not like this. And I feel like he's blown up so big that I feel like people almost forget this. Like, this is the movie that launched him and made him who he is, but I feel like he's kind of surpassed it, and people think, like, oh, the Batman Begins, the Dark Knight guy. Yeah, before
yeah.
that, the Memento guy, the Insomnia guy.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, I rag on him. I don't like the stuff he's done outside of Batman and Memento and even Insomnia. It's not for me. Like, he's just not making movies for me, which is fine. Memento felt like it was for me. It's a crime drama. There's so many little details that you pick up along the way.
Because he's kind of solving it minute at a time, a bit like Source Code. You're just getting one clue, step closer every day, except he's not reliving the same day.
Yeah.
But he's sort of starting from scratch again, kind of.
It's a brilliant piece of writing from his brother. It's a fantastic story from Jonathan Nolan, who it also launched him. Like, he's had a hell of a writing career as well. It had to be my number one. Yeah, you know, John G did it, but who's John G? And other than Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, what other also rants do you have?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Because I thought that that one might occur to you. Chinatown. I put L.A. Confidential on instead. I don't want to say they're the same movie because they're not, but I feel like I've talked about Chinatown before, and I know I've mentioned L.A. Confidential, but I don't know if it's ever actually made a list.
I almost compare that, what I talked about DOA, where DOA came out in 88, the remake,
yeah,
to where it's like, oh, this isn't a time of noir, so let's launch one right in the middle and see if it sticks.
Yeah.
I feel like L.A. Confidential was that. Like, it came out at a time when we weren't really getting them, and it was a straight noir, but it was packaged prettier. It wasn't trying to release a movie from 1948 in 1997. It was updating it.
Yes.
And I think it worked. Like, it did feel like an older noir movie, but it was updated. I liked it a lot. I also had Clue.
Yeah. Obviously, when you think murder mystery.
Yeah. And Clue, it's not a game anymore.
No. And Clue was legit. Yeah. As far as a movie goes, it's an adaptation of a board game. I mean, the bar is set pretty low.
Battleship or
neck and
neck. I think
neck,
the two that
right?
you think of. I had Clue, DOA, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Jumanji and also ran on that list.
We keep mentioning movies that are on our calendar for later on. But Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I only left it off because I thought it was on you. It would be on yours.
Yep.
Even The Nice Guys, like, yep, it could have been either one. But we've done a Kiss Kiss Bang Bang episode.
We like Shane Black. You get it.
We do like Shane Black. It's our Cluvies on up, getting us into November. The rest of this month and the next month to get us into 2018. So we like our end of the year stuff. We'll go back to the uppies. We'll get to our favorites of the year. That's all coming up in 7 weeks or so. Next week, we're going to America's Sweetheart.
Juvia.
Julia's on up. Julia,
yeah,
Roberts movies.
Trying to figure out how to.
Yeah, I think Juvie's, we're done with that. Juvies.
Nope. Never mind. Don't Google that.
That was our favorite murder mysteries. Go see Murder on a Train, I guess. I like Daisy Ridley.
Yeah, sure. I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, I like Star Wars.
Yeah, she's charming.
Yeah, off camera, she's charming.
Yeah, so, I don't know, I won't see it, though. But you can. It's in theaters this week.
And tell Dave who committed the murder.
Until next week.
Keep it up.